You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, Welsh Forest Focus. The international break is over and the Premier League's back as Nottingham Forest play their first game since the points deduction when they faced Crystal Palace on Saturday. Joining us to discuss that game, Stephen Reid's choice words for Paul Tierney and an agent change for Murillo are, first of all, Reds fan Emily Anderson. Emily, morning. How are you doing?
Morning. Very well, thanks. Are you all right, Matt?
Yes, not too bad. Not too bad. Good to have you with us. Second guest today is Pete Blackburn. Pete, are you well?
Yeah, good, thanks. Lovely to be back after a boring international break.
Very boring. Didn't watch any of it. Well, I saw the highlights of the Belgium game and that was about it. Yeah, no interest at all. Third guest should be Michael Temple, who is running a little late. Someone put in the comments, is he mowing the wicket at Trent Bridge? No, but it did make us laugh. But he should be with us soon and we'll add him in when he is. So yeah, as I said, we'll discuss those things, but we should kick off today with the news that, well, we understand that Larry Lloyd's passed away. Speaking to Gary Birtles and a few of the other legends. So there's, some speculation about that. We understand that Larry Lloyd has passed away at the age of 75. One of the true club legends, a European Cup winner. And we'll try and get some more out of Gary where with his thoughts on Larry, perhaps later today or next week. I don't know. Is there anything you want to say, Emily or Pete, about it? Obviously, we weren't watching at the time, but we have to pay due respect to what those guys contributed to the club, and now first Trevor Francis and now Larry Lloyd. So it's obviously a very sad day.
Well, they are club legends, aren't they? That whole squad of players. And even if we didn't see them play, we weren't old enough. You know exactly who Larry Lloyd is and what he did for our club. An incredible player for us and was part of the European Cup winning side. And it's always sad to see them go. And am I right in thinking he's in his 70s, so he's no age, really. Really, really sad for the club, and I hope his passing is marked in a way, in a fitting way for the Palace game.
Yeah.
Just to add, Matt, I had the pleasure and privilege of covering quite a lot of the sort of fanfare around the I Believe in Miracles film when it came out. And it was an absolute joy spending time with a lot of that that bunch of Forest players and great guys all around. But Larry, and particularly Larry and Kenny together, were just a phenomenal double act off the pitch, just like they were on it. And it was great to have a few moments in and around their banter, which was still as sort of spiky and brilliant as it ever was, I imagine. So yeah, it's a really sad day, a real icon for the club and such a big part of the best times in our history.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And like I say, we'll try and catch up with Gary Birtles and get some more on Larry Lloyd in the next few days or early next week. Right, let's talk about Crystal Palace then. Obviously, a very big game. Doesn't feel as big as the Luton game, Emily, but it probably should, really, because now we've lost the points and we'll come on to appeals. But we know what the state of play is. How are you feeling about this one?
I think it does feel as big as the Luton game. For me, it feels even bigger. I hate to to give you a cliche, but it is the first of 9 cup finals for us. We have to win this game. There's no two ways about it. We have to go in. We have to fight. We have to beat them. We're in a terrible run of form. There's no hiding behind that, but so are they. They haven't won in their last 8 away games. They've had one win under their new manager, Ollie Glasner. They still have injuries. I know they've got Michael Olise potentially coming back into the side, but they've had the massive injury blow of Sam Johnston being out potentially for the rest of the season. We need to go into this game fighting. We need to galvanise all that hurt, anger, frustration we've had from refereeing decisions off the pitch, from the profit and sustainability arguments off the pitch. Get all that, bundle it into this ball of fire and go into that game fighting. We have to win this game. We can win this game. On paper, Crystal Palace haven't beaten us in the Premier League. We should have beaten them at Selhurst Park earlier in the season. I was at that game. We missed opportunities to beat them. It turned out to be a boring 0-0, but we should have easily, comfortably won that game. We go into this game, hopefully as favourites, with the home advantage, and we have to win it. It is so important. I never like to put an importance on a single game because I think it can make the fans and the players maybe react in a negative way. But unfortunately, we are where we are. We are nearly in April. The season is coming to a close. We're currently in the relegation zone and we have to win. And for the fans, get behind Forest, be the 12th man, no matter what happens on the pitch. We have to come out fighting.
What about you, Pete? In terms of, I suppose, bundling up the negative energy of the points deduction and making it, you know, work to our advantage. I suppose that's what we want to see. How, do you think we'll see it?
Well, I mean, I really hope so. It's hard to disagree with anything that Emily said there, really. And it's a very concise and pretty perfect summary of where we are and where hopefully we will be after the game. I'm very optimistic about it, as, to be honest. I think the international break has done me a world of good and sort of washed away some of the cynicism and the worry and all that sort of stuff. And it feels like a bit of a fresh start for me personally. And I really hope that that's the way it can be for the club and for the players and the staff. You know, the hope is that that is really where we should be, because, as you say, there's an element of certainty now around the situation. We know what we've got to do. We've got 9 games. We've got to better Luton. There may be other teams in the race as well, but that's obviously factor number one. But I'm very positive about the game because, as Emily said, I mean, this is a Crystal Palace team that we face in not a good moment for them. You know, granted, we talk a lot about the state of Forest and the difficulties we face, but Palace have, I think, lost 4 and drawn 1 of the last 5 away games over the course of the season. I think I'm right in saying that their goal difference away from home is minus 14 or something along those lines. They don't look, from what I can gather, they don't look like scoring in away games and don't really look like troubling teams a huge amount. And they've got an ongoing injury crisis as well. I don't think if you look at their team, it's altogether that strong. I think there's an awful lot to say for optimism for us in this game. And Forest have got to take that. And what we really, really, really need to see is just a move back to some of that intent from the early days of Nuno's time at the club. You know, if we can go out there with the sort of fearlessness and attacking mindset that we had against Man United and Newcastle in those early games, then there's every reason to think that we can get something. And we did it more recently against West Ham. And we've had other good performances, you know, like the Liverpool one, where we've shown real sort of fight. So if we can bundle all that stuff up together, I think that there is real cause for optimism. And I'm really hopeful that we might get 3 points here.
Let me just add our latecomer in Michael Temple, who's just texted me to say he's in the Matrix. Temps, hello. You're muted. Are you meant to be muted? Unmute yourself. How are you?
Just out of professionalism, Matt, I thought if I was going to turn up late, I better not be on be interrupting Pete's eloquent answer there. Yeah, apologies. The county cricket season started, so I do have a genuine cause on my time now. How are you?
Good. We're good. We're good. I'll come back to you straight away, Tams. Pete says he's very optimistic about this game, and we kind of go into all these games with optimism. I mean, is that mental? Because we've only won 6 games this season. How are you feeling?
Yeah, strangely optimistic as well. I've got a couple of friends who are Palace fans who I'll actually take into the game on Saturday. And they're dreading this fixture. They're dreading us turning the corner. They know that we've got dangerous players. They're really down on their own form. And they don't score anywhere near enough goals for a side that's been where they have been for so long. They rely on 2 or 3 players. They've got some game breakers and they haven't been available to them for long periods of time. So we're favourites for a reason in this fixture. And I'll echo what Pete said. I feel extremely optimistic. My route to survival has us taking 4 points in 4 days, and three of those are going to be against Palace.
Let's hope so. Let's hope so. It's interesting because the opposition fan we had on earlier this week, Matt Watts, he was really down about the game and thought, he said it's got 1-0 Forest written all over it. The stats for the game, I looked at them earlier, I sent them around to the other guys. Like, defensively in the last six games, Palace have got the fourth best defence in the league. And inexplicably, we've got the fifth best defence in the league statistically. So it shows that, you know, take stats with a pinch of salt. But equally, Palace attack is the 18th worst in the league over that stretch. And we've been more potent without getting the results with the seventh best attack in the league. So it kind of points to a tight game, Emily. You say a 1-0, a very nervy affair if we are going to win, do you think?
Yeah, probably similar to the game at Selhurst Park when it ended up being a drab at 0-0, but with plenty of chances for Forest, I would say more than for Crystal Palace. Yeah, I feel like if we're going to nick it, we're going to nick it 1-0. There's not going to be much more in it, I suggest. And I can't see anything other than a Forest victory on Saturday, setting myself up for a massive fall there. But we should be beating them. I said, didn't I, that, you know, this is... The form suggests that it could go either way, but the history between the two clubs suggests that we should be getting a result here because they still haven't been able to beat us in the Premier League. And let's hope that doesn't happen on Saturday. We've talked about that they're effectively good at defending, but attacking wise, they just don't seem to have anything up front at the moment. I mentioned Elise is probably back in the side, but they've still got plenty of others that are out injured. And I do think... psychologically, the injury of Sam Johnstone so close to this game is really going to impact on them because he's such a big part of their squad, and it's a big time, isn't it, for Hendo to step up between the sticks, which I think will be a really interesting opportunity for him and for us, really.
Yeah. Emily, I've got a lot of respect for Michael Elise as well. I think he's their best player, and that is a plus point for them, him coming back in. What I was going to say, Matt, sorry to interrupt. The way we go about winning this game is to attack. I don't think this is a camp, nick it 1-0 on the break kind of fixture. I think we need to pick a team that we expect to have more than 50% of possession, that we expect to build, that we expect to take the game to them. And for me, that means the wingers, that means the progressive midfielders, that means attacking roles for the fullback. I do think that our best chance of getting the points from these two games is to go out there on the front foot, have some expectation, have a bit of confidence, be comfortable with the ball, and just be bold. Don't die wondering. Don't leave two or three lads back for to be 20-minute men impact at the end. Let's get on this. Let's take this game to them. Two games in 4 days at home to make us all feel good about ourselves. It starts on Saturday.
Yeah, and obviously at the same time, Luton have got some wretched away games, which kind of makes it a little more enticing as well. Perhaps we'll come back to that later. Just looking at the press conference schedule for managers, Glasser's not on it today, so we probably won't get an update on Elise. Nuno's at 2 p.m. and we'll come on to our team shortly. But we do know, Pete, about Sam Johnstone out for the season. Ordinarily, I think that's great because you get the Duff reserve keeper come in. But Dean Henderson, he's going to come here and he's going to really want to prove a point, I guess, isn't he? And show, you know, remind Forest fans how good he was and, you know, probably have us wishing that we'd signed him to an extent.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure he's going to have those feelings, but I'm not convinced it can make an awful lot of difference to his performance. I mean, I'm pretty sure he's trying quite hard to save the shots in the first place in normal games. I'm not particularly worried about that, to be honest. And Henderson, I don't think, is a particular downgrade on Johnstone, but it doesn't seem like he's having a particularly good time of it there. And let's face it, he hasn't had a great time of it in his recent career because injuries have been very difficult. Performances have been up and down going back to his time with us. And there was a fair bit of criticism of him, particularly in terms of facing long range shots and all that sort of stuff. So he's not, I wouldn't have thought he's going to be in the sort of most confident sort of moment in his career. But personally, I'm not too worried about it. He's a good goalkeeper and he'll, you know, I think we'll have to finish well to beat him like we will most Premier League goalkeepers. And that's been a problem in our game recently. We've been pretty profligate. We've still created some chances, but we haven't been sharp in front of goal. But when it comes to all the psychology of it, I don't think it's going to play into the game too much. Forest just have to go out there and do their job, like Tam said.
Ian asks about how were we fifth defensively, seventh in attack and still bottom form. That's just the last six games, but there is a trend that we underperformed our numbers all season because our goalkeepers have, you know, thrown the ball in the net a couple of times and stuff like that. And we've, you know, got this set piece failing to this horrific degree, which leads on, Temps, to another thing about Palace. I'm talking to their fan early in the week. I asked him what their weaknesses were, and he said defending set pieces and having the discipline to see games out. So it kind of bodes for an interesting battle of who's worse at defending set pieces and having the discipline to play 100 minutes of football, doesn't it?
What you described there is why I like Palace fans. I've a really good mate of mine. I've been to a few Palace away trips with. They're a funny bunch, apart from the ultras in the black tracksuits. Hiding behind a flag. If you ever get a chance to watch the YouTube clip of the guys parodying that, where the guy's setting off a smoke machine but it affects his asthma, do have a look at that. Well worth wasting 3 minutes of your day. But they know what they are in the sense that they're loving their Premier League journey. They're happy to be 13th, 14th every year. They do have a wry humour about the ups and downs of being a team at that level. I think we perceive, rightly or wrongly, that we want to go beyond that and that we are a, you know, quote unquote, a bigger club than Palace, and we see ourselves climbing the structure. I think the point I'm trying to make is, fine, that's a great ambition. You've got to go out there and beat them, and we're not consistently doing that at this moment in time, are we? There's nothing to suggest that this is a tap-in, easy victory. We're under real pressure because of the results and the performances, bluntly, that we've put in the last few weeks. So I understand that dourness from some of the Palace fans, but they've earned the right to be in the Premier League. They've consistently churned out players. They've consistently resisted overtures from middle and top-end club to take away those guys that they're producing. They've managed to hang on in there with, you know, the likes of Will Hughes, who's ex-Derby County, never played international football, a kind of, you know, middling Premier League footballer. But they do create a spirit and find a way to get results. They grind it out. They dog it out. And I just want to see us have a bit more of that Palace spirit, if you like, to add to the individual qualities of our players, which are undeniable. So, yeah, made a bit of a ramble there, but I like the tone that the Palace fan had. I recognise it, but yeah, how do we ruin his weekend? We beat them on the pitch. It's as simple as that. Result is all that matters. Let's go out there and grab it.
A couple of other bits of injury news for Palace that are quite useful for us. The central midfielder, who's really good, whose name I've forgotten. I think it's Decore or Coyote. I can't remember now. I should have remembered. Decore. He's out for the season. He's really good. And Mark Gay, he's out as well by the look of it, unless there's some kind of dramatic recovery. So that's a key cog in their defence who's out as well. And their new right back limped off in international duty, Munoz, who looks really good. So hopefully he's out as well, which could help Forrest. Although we've been in this position before, we've been, you know, had injuries and not really cashed in them. So now we certainly need to. Do us a favour if you haven't already, hit like, hit subscribe. As Audrey says, and just a quick shout, we'll do a plug for the Trent Navigation. But before we do that, we have our live show on Thursday, April the 11th. Get your tickets now. The link is in the description. So it'd be great to see you there. Temps is there on the panel. Emily's there after she finishes work. Pete's there saying hello to people. And Lewis and Fletch and Mikey complete the lineup. So do come along to that. It's £8. It was going to be £8 a ticket. I didn't realize they would add the 80 pence admin fee to it. So it's £8.80 a ticket, and £1 from each ticket go to Maggie's Nottingham as like a charity partner, you know, a cause close to Temps's heart. Right. Let's just have a quick plug for the Trent Navigation. Obviously, on Saturday, it's against Palace, so we'll have a little video for the match day experience. I'll be there before the match as well. So come along and say hello if you're around, but here is a 15-second video. We shall see you on the other side.
I just need to teach Matt a little lesson in marketing, because he's tried to sell his 1,000 tickets there for £8.80, and then he said, come and meet me for free on Saturday. So if you want to... If you want to touch the hem of Matt's clothing for free, turn up at the Nav before Palace.
Yeah. Come to our live show as well. Yeah, thank you. Temps is much better at marketing than me, obviously. But yeah, come along to the live show, say hello. We'll make sure it's a good night, because they always have been historically, and I'm sure this will be no different. Right, let's go to our lineups then. I've got an apology to make to Pete already, because the file downloaded wrong. So there's no Pete lineup, but they're all so similar that we'll just talk around basically the same two positions on the pitch. Right. Oh, one of them's disappeared as well. All right, I'm just going to put one up and we'll talk around this and see whose it is. It is Emily Anderson's team. Right, I'll read it out. Basically, every player is the same apart from the two in midfield for all four of us. So it's Matt Sells in goal, Williams, Bolly, Murillo, Toffolo at the back, and we're working on the proviso that Willie Bolly's available. And then Yates and Danilo in midfield for Emily, Ilanga, Gibbs-White, Hudson-Odoi, and Chris Wood up front, who we believe is fit and firing and ready to go for that one. So just talk us through those names, Emily, and then we'll pick out a few individuals after that.
Well, I guess the back four picks itself. And like we say, we're assuming Bolly is fit again. If not, I'd slot in Felipe in his place. Nico Williams has had an outstanding international campaign, hasn't he? He's just getting better and better every match. So he's, to me, first name on the team sheet, actually, at the moment. And just as a mention, I think he should definitely get a shout at set pieces if it's not going well on Saturday for Morgan Gibbs-White. Maybe give Nico a shot at the odd free kick. Yeah, so the back four kind of speaks for itself. And the front four, I keep saying that front four, and yet Nuno seems to know better than me, and starting with Origi, dropping Callum Hudson-Odoi to the bench. But for me, we have to start with that front four. Obviously, we know Taiwo's out, which means Chris Wood gets the starting shirt, fully deserves it. And am I right in thinking he's one goal off going into double figures for this Premier League campaign? So wouldn't it be great if he does that on Saturday? And I've opted for Yates. I think he's really earned his spot. We know what he can do. We know what he can't do. But for me, he's our captain. He's got to start. So he's in the midfield to break up play and do everything that we know he can do well. And I chose Danilo over Sangare or Dominguez, because I know when I was last on, people accused me of slagging off Sangare and not giving him a chance. And I know we've had another game, and yet again, he's disappointed. So for me, he hasn't earned his shirt for us, which is a shame because of the price tag and everything that goes with that. But I think he's still got time to bed in, but I certainly wouldn't be starting with him on Saturday. Dominguez as well is too up and down for me to start. And I think Danilo has definitely earned a place in the starting lineup. And just in case the people think I'm a Sangare hater, I'm not. I think he's great. I really want him to do well. I'm willing him to do well. But so far, he's been nothing more than a 6 out of 10 for me.
Very good. You said you bring Felipe in if Bolly's out. So you wouldn't bring Omobamadeli in.
Do you know what? I'd forgotten about him, which is awful, isn't it? But I just think, and I've said this before, Omobamadeli and Murillo are both great players in their own right, but they're both very young. And with this really important run-in that we've got in now, I just think we need experience alongside that maybe lack of maturity. So I would start Felipe. But if Omobamadeli started on Saturday, I'd have no issue with that at all. We're really lucky with our centre-backs at the moment. We've got good pairings. We just don't know which work best together necessarily.
A few people in the comments asking about Ola Aina's fitness. I think he might be back. We'll find out tomorrow. I mean, if he is back, would you throw him straight back in, Emily, or do you still give Toff the shirt?
No, I'd give Toff the shirt and wait for him to make a big error. I think he's doing really well on the left. All the plaudits at the moment are going to Nico because he seems to be the one that's shining, but Toff's doing a decent job. He's doing way more than we ever expected of him. And to me, he's more than earned his place at left back. So I think Ola Aina needs to be graduated in, as do all players.
Let's move on to the next one, which is Temps' team. Sorry, Pete. I can see you're very disappointed that you've missed out on a graphic here. We will come to you. So Temps, same back four, same front four, and then in midfield, it's Sangare and Yates. Having said on Monday that he was going to pick Danilo, and the consensus was Sangare and Yates are the only pair that don't work. So go to bat for that pairing camp for the rest of your team.
Well, Emily's just framed it perfectly. We know what a Sangare should do, and typically doesn't. I mean, that Yates does do, and consistently does. That's why Yates is getting a nod, because he planned from training, the manager's instructions, the leadership, the endeavour, the graft, and he pours his heart out every single Sunday. I've opted for Sangare there to give us some defensive solidity and to allow the front four to be the front four. The one we're all agreeing in that we're not quite logically aligned with Nuno on is Divock Origi. Yes, he's improved. He's shown flashes, but he hasn't scored in the Premier League since April 2022. He doesn't carry the same creative assist threat for me as Callum Hudson-Odoi is. So we're sat here arguing about which two of four centre mids to pick when there's a piece of paper between them. There's no one obviously standing out. Dominguez is probably the one of the four we've spoken about less, but some of the qualities he brings to the four are exceptional too. So I wouldn't be affected if my team or Emily's team was selected. I just think there's no two of those deeper lying centre mids have really put their flag in the ground and said, I'm undroppable. So it's going to be one we debate between now and the end of the season. But I think you'll see something like mine or Emily's team. But I wouldn't be surprised, given how Nuno's been thinking, if there are minutes for Origi and Dominguez. But yeah, I can't argue against Emily's selection.
There's one here from Pete Cartwright in the comments. It's a bit left field, but we have seen Gibbs-White play deeper and play Reina in the 10. I'm asking about Reina attempts because he did have that very good international break with the US, play of the tournament for the Nations League CONCACAF final, 1 goal, 2 assists in 2 games. So obviously something there, but is it too much to bring him straight back in for a start? Well, it's just back in. He's never started, but is it too much to get him on the pitch for 90 minutes in this one?
It's not a time to experiment, is it? So what's Reina become? He's become the key to the door if we need it after with 20 minutes to go. And unfortunately, he profiles so similarly to Morgan Gibbs-White that he's not going to start a game anytime soon. So that's a logical suggestion around, can we accommodate them both in there and play Morgan Gibbs-White a bit deeper? Well, of course you could, but what do you lose? You lose that defensive solidity and that box-to-box central midfielder, which Morgan isn't. He's at his best when he's getting on the ball between the lines, being a creative force, using his striker, using his wingers, tying everything together. He's brilliant at that. And I think we'd lose so much of what he offers if we don't build a team around him at number 10. So as much as it makes that loan signing of Reina seem illogical, as excited as we are about the things he's done for the US national team, he's not starting this game. He's not even close. Nuno is all in on Gibbs-White in the 10.
What about your team then, Pete? I'm trying to find the graphic, but I've completely lost it. Sorry. Just talk us through your midfield selection, because it's different to the other two guys.
Yeah, well, the only one difference in that I'm pretty hot on Dominguez being in this team, to be honest. I think we might... The nature of the season is that we've been doing an awful lot of reacting to performances because games have been so up and down. Players have been coming in and out of the team. I think we're all guilty of being quite sort of reactionary when players have a good game or a bad game, and I've certainly done an awful lot of that. I think in Danilo's case, we're being incredibly optimistic about what he brings to the team. And I think a lot of it is based on a bit of the eye test in what you feel like he can offer, but also in that West Ham game. But realistically, I don't think he's offered us an awful lot from that defensive position. And if you have a look at his data, I think the instinct is when you watch him, you think, oh, this is a player with an eye for a progressive pass. He's got a range of passing, all that sort of stuff. But none of that is shown in the data whatsoever. He is low down when it comes to progressive passing. His volume of passing is very minimal. Pass completion is poor. And you compare his data to Dominguez's and it's worlds apart. And Dominguez offers you a lot of the stuff that I think Forest desperately need in defence on his good days. And granted, I totally agree with the others that this is really up and down selection because these players have been inconsistent. All of them have. But Dominguez offers you an all-round game. He's a more progressive passer than Danilo. He contributes more in terms of attacking output. And he offers all the defensive stuff. In fact, his defensive stats sort of stand up to most of them. So I play Dominguez and Yates. I think they're the best option for the game. And personally, I'm sort of sticking with that for the majority of the rest of the season, I think. There may be some moments for horses for courses. But I think Dominguez gives you the opportunity to have a solid two who both contribute defensively and give you a platform to work on. But he can also join the attack He can get the ball to Gibbs White, he can get the ball out wide, and he can contribute in terms of getting up the pitch and adding goals to the game as well. So for me, I'm going to try and not just keep picking different teams because I keep doing that, and nail my colours to the Dominguez mast. I think he's the right player to play alongside Yates with us, for us, and I think we need a bit of stability now. So I'm sticking to that. Otherwise, hopefully, Bolly will be fit. They've got a physical threat up front in Mateta, but I don't think he's the sort of massive worry that we've had in terms of some of the other teams we've played recently. So if Bolly can't play, I'm not going to be desperately stressed about it. Personally, I'll play on Abamadeli, I think, over Felipe. I'm slightly concerned about Felipe's flaw in recent weeks. When he's bad and not contributing, it seems to be pretty detrimental to the team. Omar Bamadeli, I don't think, has let us down a great deal, and he offers more in terms of mobility and that sort of stuff. So I think I'd go that way. And the other thing, big thing that I think Tempest and Emily have touched upon is, for me, Hudson-Odoi's got to be in the team, and he's got to be in the team pretty much every game from here on in. And I don't think we can afford, as Tempest said earlier, to die wondering now. We've got 9 cup finals, as Emily mentioned. It's time for us to attack, to get our strengths on the pitch and show some real intent. And I don't think we can afford to have a genuine game breaker on the bench. And I don't think anyone would accuse Hudson-Odoi of being someone that you have to carry all game. I think he contributes in defensive moments. He's very, very good at wriggling out of tight spaces in his own half and keeping the ball. And I think he can bring an awful lot of threat to our attack and, crucially, goals when we're struggling in that side of things. So for me, it's time to get him on the pitch and stick with him and give him as much confidence as possible, because he could be the man to keep us in this league.
Very good. Very good. Right. Having Pete says how bad Danilo is, and people in the comments say how bad Danilo is, here's my team.
To be fair, I didn't say, I'm not saying it's bad at all. He is
for comedy effect, because I've got Danilo in, but yeah, go on, sorry.
No, he is. I don't want to be accused of bagging, because I'm really not. I do think he's a really talented player, and I also think he's someone that he could contribute a lot for us going forward, both on the pitch and in terms of being a saleable asset as well. But I don't think that role is his best position. I think he'd be much better up slightly further up the pitch. And also, I'm just not sure that he's altogether that reliable, and perhaps none of them are, apart from Yates, most of the time. But I think he's more unreliable, and he's more of a worry to me. He gives away the ball an awful lot, and I'm not sure really what we're asking him to contribute from there, if it's basically his passing range, which doesn't seem to play out.
Here's my team with the ultra rubbish Danilo in the middle. Right. same as everyone else, Matt Sells in goal, Williams, Bolly, Omar Bamadeli would come in for me if he's out. Murillo, I've got Toffolo, but I would start Aina if he's fit. We'll have to wait on that. And then I've got Dominguez and Danilo in midfield, and then the same attacking four. And I agree with everyone. I don't mind Origi, but I don't see why he's justifying all these starts. So I did try and put some logic into why I've got these two in midfield. Danilo and Dominguez was the pairing against West Ham, where I thought we played really well. And Danilo has started a lot of our wins. And also, they're quite athletic in midfield. Eze is a 10, if Elise plays. I just feel like we need some legs in there, which is probably why I've gone against Sangare. And I think Danilo might be able to do a bit of a job in combination with Dominguez and keeping Eze quiet. I would pick Yates, but I worried that he would resort to fouling someone like Eze quite a lot. And I just don't think we can defend dead balls. But the thing is, you could pick any of the combination of the four and it could work well, and it could be an absolute disaster. Well, not a disaster. It could not work well. It's just like, as we've all said, we're picking different combinations because they've all been so inconsistent. But that was my thinking of just trying to deal with the threat of Eze a little bit. Right. Anyone got any final thoughts on team selection or the game before we move on? Collective silence. Good. Right. One of the big factors around this week and sort of impacting the game is, obviously, we know the points deduction, but we have appealed. What do you think about it, Thames? Because on Monday, I think we all kind of thought it was probably wise or reasonable not to and just take the medicine. But now we have. What's your thoughts on it?
Put ourselves back in the space where it's part of the story again, haven't we? And it wasn't. I think it had been accepted. We'd all dived into the judgment and seen how we conducted ourselves in the process and leaned into it and been credited for that with mitigation. So opening the wound again feels like a distraction for me. Lewis articulated on Monday that it won't be a distraction for the players, that they'll be single-minded enough to compartmentalise that and crack on. I wouldn't have appealed. I think that it was clearly found that we had breached. It was clearly found that from that point we leaned in and did everything we could to rectify it, and that we were in no way evasive when we had those discussions with the panel. So my personal preference would have been to leave it and just focus on the football. Shootout against Luton over the final few games of the season. More than enough in the camp to get to where we need, and just not have this distraction. So as a fan, disappointed that we've decided to prolong this process.
What about you, Pete?
Yeah, I don't really disagree with anything Temp said. I certainly wanted us just to leave things where they were when the ruling was handed down. I felt a little bit like we got away with it, to be honest, because that 2-point deduction feels pretty arbitrary, although the whole process feels pretty arbitrary, certainly the way it's been applied anyway, and the judgments based on that application. I think I sort of struggle to buy the... I mean, I would bow to Lewis's knowledge, obviously, because I've got no clue compared to him, but I sort of struggle to buy the idea that it just doesn't impact the players at all. I think that uncertainty around a club and a working environment must have an impact somewhere. And to me, that's a worry. And there's the wider issue about all the sort of the narratives that we seem to be embroiled in. We seem to be just picking fights left, right and centre. And I just really wish we could sort of focus on one cause and really stick to that. It may be that that's all sort of intangible stuff and doesn't really matter. So I'm hopeful that's the case. I mean, I do think that there is a degree of certainty now, because I think it's very unlikely that a more significant points deduction is handed down from the appeal commission. It would seem, and granted, there's been an awful lot of mess and chaos so far, but it would seem pretty outrageous for an appeal panel to decide that the original panel were incorrect to say that they had been really well engaged with by the football club, given that they're different people and it's a different process. So I'd find that really odd. Looking at it from sort of in sort of cold light of day, I can only see that Forest can have an argument over 1 point, because there's 3 points for having a breach. We aren't arguing with that. There's 3 points for having a significant breach. So I guess Forest's argument must be that those other mitigations haven't been taken into account. So that the promotion bonuses and extras and COVID, that's 20-odd million pounds. You take that off, you also add in the near miss of Brennan Johnson, and the financial picture looks very different. So perhaps Forest are going to try and argue again that it wasn't a significant breach. And if that's the case, then perhaps there's a point to play for. Clearly, this will all be decided in hindsight. And if we get a point back, it could be massive for the season. So, you know, I'll shut my mouth at that point. I wouldn't have done it, but I'm hopeful that it doesn't end up being another endless distraction, because the last few months have been really difficult. And, you know, hopefully, yeah, there's no more damage to come from it. But I would have left it where it was.
Yeah, I can see both sides to it. But like Pete, I think the best to get a point back. So in that sense, Forrest would say, yeah, it's worth it to chase it. And I would assume they've been advised they can get a point back, potentially. But my initial instinct was to batten down the hatches and move on now. Like, I think there's always this thing, and we'll come to Greg on the overlap, but Gary Neville said about giving players an excuse. And a former manager used to say that to me all the time, don't give players an excuse. And I just feel like having that cloud over the whole situation could have been avoided now. We could have cracked on with it, and I feel like we should have enough to beat Luton in a shootout. So I was kind of hoping we'd move on, because it's felt like a bit of a mental drag on the whole season for me. So, yeah, I mean, my big worry initially was that they were going to increase the points sanction, and even if there was a small percentage chance, then I wouldn't have done it. But if there is no worry about that, then I suppose there's nothing to lose on the face of it. But I was quite looking forward to moving on, frankly, from the whole affair and just getting back to the football. Right. Next topic before we go was around Murillo. We've talked about Murillo and transfers a lot. He looks like he's changed agent, Temps, which is never a particularly good sign of things. Brennan changed agent before he went, and other players have done that. I mean, I suppose, could it lead to a new contract for him? Is that the best outcome for Forest? Because I imagine they probably got him for a bit of a song financially, and his value's increased, you know, to a considerable degree. Any thoughts on this? Any worries that it changes the picture?
Yeah, look, I'll go further than that. I think it's highly unlikely that we retain the services of Murillo beyond the summer transfer window, such as not just the potential, but the attainment and the things he's doing in the Premier League right now. The scouts, the analysts will be thinking, how can he plug in and around better teams, players making elite level runs, you know, the current Arsenal side, whatever. And the answer for me is pretty easily. He just seems to have physical attributes in abundance, a comfort on the ball, which belies a typical central defender. Clearly has the ability, a la Ben White, John Stones, to stride out with the ball or even play CDM at some point in the future. So what are Forest thinking? Do they want to lose a player of that quality? Of course they don't, other than the fact that there's significant profit attached and an ability to rebalance the team and to look at bringing players in other positions to make the whole piece bigger, better, rather than just having this potential superstar, future Brazilian captain, future Real Madrid Champions League winner at centre-half. So my honest prediction as I sit here right now, sell him in the summer, because the money will be there from someone. Someone will pay top dollar for Murillo. It protects the need for us to accept lesser bids for a Morgan Gibbs-White or an Elanga or whoever else it might be. But market forces talk. And if you've got a player who's playing above the sum total of your side, of that age profile in particular, they won't be there for long. I think it's highly unlikely that we get to September with Murillo still in our squad.
Mm-hmm. Emily, I'm very sorry. I should have come to you for that question. You sat there and listened to the PSR chaps. You don't talk about PSR because of you're a BBC employee. That's why. So people are wondering. Yeah, talk about Murillo. And I'll make a counter argument that maybe should we keep him because he does have creases in his game still. Would he benefit from staying here and just refining his attributes at Forest and playing 38 games for Forest rather than 15 for Liverpool next season or something like that?
We'd love that, wouldn't we? Because it would mean we'd get another season with Murillo. But I'm on the same lines as Temps. I don't see him being here beyond the next 9 games. So let's enjoy those next 9 games with him in the side. And if I'm honest, from the moment he came to us and we could see what he could do, and he cemented his place into the centre-back role very quickly, I knew he wouldn't be with us for very long. He's got so much talent. He's so young. He's got a great attitude. We know exactly what he can do. We just need to enjoy the time we've got left with him, I think. He's got such a bright future ahead of him. And, you know, as gutting as it will be to lose him at the end of the season, he's going to flourish somewhere big. He's going to be at a big European club or a top 6 Premier League club. So let's enjoy that time. And actually, like Temp said, for me, it's more important that we maybe lose a young rising talent like that than maybe have to part ways with someone like Morgan Gibbs-White, who we paid a heck of a lot more than we did for Murillo, so we wouldn't be making as much profit anyway. I would be sad to see him go, and I think the fact that he's got a new agent speaks volumes, doesn't it? But he's kind of like, the only way I can liken it to, he's like, you know, like a really hot boyfriend or girlfriend that you know you're not quite good enough for, you know it's not going to last the distance, you ain't going to marry them, but just enjoy that journey while you've got them.
Murillo, who are you talking about, Emily? Who are you talking about?
No, but he's that guy, isn't he? He's the guy that, you know, he's the everyone fancies him in your class at school, but you know that you're never going to actually be with him for a long time. So just let him go and sow his seed and do his thing.
You're talking about Felipe again, aren't you? You're talking about Felipe.
How do you carry on from that? I suppose, Emily, I'll stick with you as well because I left you hanging for so long there. I suppose is Omobamadeli kind of the perfect player to plug in for next season as well and hopefully be a regular? Because with respect to him, he probably doesn't have that ceiling of Murillo. He's someone who could stay at Forest for 4, 5, 6 years, hopefully.
And actually, if you look at the centre-backs that we've got, we've mentioned it briefly, we've got a decent crop of centre-backs. If we're going to lose from any position, maybe that's the position to lose it from. And like you say, we have the perfect heir to the throne in Omobamadeli, who's young, keen, obviously probably hasn't got the same ceiling as a Murillo. I mean, we don't know that yet, but we don't think that. And yeah, he's more likely to be able to grow. You talked about maybe Murillo growing with us for another season, a perfect opportunity for Omobamadeli to do that. And we've still got Nkate, we've got Willy Bolly that hopefully might get an extension to his contract. Felipe's obviously retiring at the end of the season. So yeah, I mean, I think Omar Bamadeli's got so much potential. And at one point, we didn't think we'd ever see him play in a Forest shirt. And then because of various reasons, he came into the side. And he's not really put a foot wrong, has he? And he's a bit like the other youngsters. He's learning every game. So I'd be more than happy for him to be the next heir to the Murillo throne.
Let's move on because the clock is ticking. Stephen Reid got his 2-game ban and his fine for telling Paul Tierney what he thought of him. Is it a fair sanction? I mean, it wasn't like he was in his face aggressive. He had his hands in his pockets, but you can't really speak to a ref and call him that and get away with it, can you? What's your take on it?
I mean, this is an absolute hospital passive aggression, isn't it? I don't know what I'm supposed to do, to be honest. We've obviously had one side of that story. I wasn't there. I've got no idea. I mean, rule number one, I guess, would be it's probably not cool to talk to officials like that. But, you know, there was an awful lot going on that touchline. I'm sure there was a fair bit coming from the other side as well. And, you know, some of that language is choice, but it was good enough for DH Lawrence. So, you know.
Good. Temps, any thoughts on
I'll jump in on that. You can't say it. You can't do it. And particularly in that immediate aftermath of the final whistle, you shouldn't be doing it on the pitch where amateur lip readers, Match of the Day cameras and the referee backed up by two witnesses in his assistant referees all backed up what Stephen Reid said. And it's unacceptable. He'd have regretted it 5 minutes later. What do you do? Go and have a word in his room after the game. He's not going to give you a red card for a heated discussion out of sight, out of mind, once you're down the tunnel. Emotions were high. He made a massive mistake, didn't he? He gave the ball to the Liverpool keeper when it should have been Hudson-Odoi in a progressive position on the left wing. That'll be dealt with. Emotions are high. You're not getting your point back at that point in time. It was a gutting moment, but you've got to restrain yourself. We're now going to be without Stephen Reid on the touchline for 2 games. And he'll have an influence, a role in those games if he was there. So, yeah, don't read that report, kids, because it's got a few words that you shouldn't ever use. But it's just that passion in the moment, anger in the moment. He didn't mean it. He's not that guy. Count to 10. Knock on his door. So you need to say. Don't do it on the pitch.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think it's a fair enough sanction. He's got his fine, he's got his ban. He's a lovely guy, Stephen Reid, and it's the heat of the moment thing that I'm sure, he might regret it, I don't know. But there's a few holier than thou types on Twitter today in the media calling for the book to be thrown at him and, you know, the way we speak to refs and I don't know. We all make mistakes and I think it's a fair enough sanction. So, yeah.
Well, that's a bigger issue if that's some line people want to go down. I think that would make a lot of sense and would probably improve the game. But there's an awful lot of that to tackle and it's going on in every game. You don't need to watch very much of a match to see the way that players talk to referees, for example, and it is generally pretty shocking and that should change. I was just going to add, my brother read the report and then sent me a text straight after saying he can see why Stephen Reid left his counselling stuff to come back to coaching if that's the way he's talking. I'm not sure how many clients would appreciate being spoken to like that when they're revealing their sort of darkest moments and stuff. Also, great moment in the comments, by the way, from somebody who says that Temps reminds them of a younger, better looking Philip Schofield.
I don't want this to haunt me and become another, like, you know, LinkedIn tit or whatever quote it was that followed me around previously. But I was late to lunch once with a few of my mates. And one of them had bunged this waiter a few quid to come over 10 minutes into the meal and say, "Mr. Schofield, how is your steak?" So he's not the first person to mention that. And I'll take it on the chin because I dish plenty out. But yeah, thanks for that. It is particularly hard at the minute for a young Philip Schofield lookalike to any kind of work. But yeah, I appreciate the humour.
Yeah, you're not getting too many party bookings as a Philip Schofield. Yeah, a lookalike, certainly. Right, on that note, we'll certainly move on as well. right, we've got a second sponsor for today's show in Home Move Estate Agents. And here is a little video about what they do, and I'll talk about it on the other side. Thank you. Thanks to Home Move Estate Agents, Ben Sales, who works for them, is a big Forest fan and big listener to the show. So thanks for their support. Details of their business are in the episode description. If you're looking to buy or sell your house, they are the people for you. Right. That was good marketing temps there, wasn't it? Thank you. Thumbs up for those who are listening, not watching. Any other business, Emily Anderson, before we go?
No, other than let's just mention lovely Greg Mitchell on the overlap with Gary Neville and Jamie Carragher. I watched his little bit this morning. He was on for quite a while. Well worth the watch. And I thought that Greg stood up to that pair really well, particularly Gary Neville, who wouldn't let him get a word in edgeways and kept talking over him, which I thought was a tad unprofessional. So good on you, Greg. Well worth the watch.
Yeah, they went at him pretty hard. But I guess that's kind of what that show is. But yeah, our little Greg stood up to it very well.
He did well. I felt very proud. I felt like a proud sister.
Yeah, his skin was glistening as well after I saw he nicked all Laura's skincare products to take them up to Manchester for the recording. So yeah, excellent work on all fronts, Greg. Right, Temps, anything before we go?
Greg doesn't realise how good he is in situations like that. I think he speaks with such passion and holds such a... passionate view of football and Forest that he's the absolute man for that, and he doesn't realize that sometimes. So I hope he watches that back and enjoys it. Pat Brett suggested that today with Emily and Temps, this morning with Emily and Temps, maybe we should get on that sofa what's gone before. But
I'll
this is
agent Temps.
Yeah, if you could get the sort to mine. Yeah. Matt, is that all right? Can you give me a call?
Yeah. Go for it.
I think Holly Willoughby does have a vacancy for a new best friend. So if anyone could put me in touch, that'd be
great. Yeah, you're right about Greg doing the overlap. It was supposed to be me originally, and I would have been terrible at it. So I'm glad Greg's doing it for sure. Oh, wow. Right. Okay. This is very good. Thanks very much to Richard Spray for his $4.99 donation. That's very kind of you, Richard. Really appreciate that. Not for the first time, I do notice. So, yeah, very grateful to you. And also Lee Tilston for his donation of £5 as well. That's great and very much appreciated. I think Lee said that he didn't agree with Danilo. So good room to donate, even though he completely disagreed with me about that. Right, Pete Blackburn, anything else you want to say before we go?
Yeah, just quickly. A few weeks ago, I said a few words about a Forest fan who tragically passed away, Chris Hunter. He was 35. And he, his family and friends were hoping, as I mentioned last time, were hoping to get sort of a minute's applause going to celebrate his life in the 35th minute of the game against Palace. It was also a long time ago that we spoke about that, so I just wanted to put that back on people's radars. And if people would like to join in with that, then I think it would mean a lot.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well said, Pete. Right, nothing else from me other than to reiterate about the sad loss of Larry Lloyd, as we mentioned at the top of the show. I see Forrest have confirmed that now, so thoughts with Larry, his family, former teammates, after his sad passing. I think that's about it from us. We'll be back tomorrow evening with a Q&A live at about 7 p.m. with myself and Mikey, and maybe one other person, I don't know who yet. But if not, do join us for that, and I'll put a plug out for questions later. And then Palace post-match at 7 p.m. on Saturday. Lineup to be confirmed as well there. It's all a bit haphazard at the moment. And everyone's going on holiday next week as well. So it's going to be might be a lot of Michael Temple and Greg Mitchell, unless Temps is going to tell me he's away next week, sunning himself.
No, I'm around.
Good. Good, because you're going to be on this a lot, hopefully. Right, like I said earlier, do get your tickets for the live show Thursday, April the 11th at the Trent Navigation, 7 p.m. start. Fletcher Lewis on the panel with Mikey and Temps, and Emily and Pete will both be there as well. So you get your tickets from the link in the description or via the Trent Navigation website, I hope, because I just said that without checking it. But I'll plug it on social media as well. Right. In the meantime, good to have so many people with us at this time on a Thursday. Is it Thursday?
Yeah.
Thursday. Yeah. So thanks for your company. Emily Anderson, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Michael Temple, thank you very much.
Cheers, everybody. See you soon.
And Pete Blackburn, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me. Nice to chat.
Yeah, very much. Nice chat as always. Enjoy it, everyone, and hopefully catch you tomorrow.
Sports Social Podcast Network.